The Campbell Group has teamed up with PI Perspectives to offer listeners top-notch, affordable insurance solutions. Private investigators can get insurance for their business for as low as $305 per year. Apply now at PIPerspectivesInsurance.com and receive a quote back within 24 hours. Dr. Chelsea Benz and Bruce Sackman are back with a collection of authors for The Art of Investigation Revisited. This second edition features all new content, and it's a great look into the skill set that's needed to be an investigative professional. Are you interested in becoming an investigator or getting better at your trade? This is the book for you, available in paperback, hardcover, or via ebook. Just search out the title, The Art of Investigation Revisited. Over the past year, our industry has been the target of foreign governments and agencies that have attempted to recruit unsuspecting investigators to gather intelligence or immediate expatriates. PI Perspectives is teaming up with the Federal Bureau of Investigations to get the word out about this ongoing crisis. If you've been contacted by an individual or company that might seem suspicious, please contact the FBI at tips.fbi.gov. You can also contact the New York field office at 212-384-1000 to report suspicious activity in any state. The link is also in the show notes. Even if you completed a job and it still doesn't sit right with you, you can report this activity. The only way to stop this trend is to work together. So let's do it. Do you enjoy our podcast and the guests we bring you? Since 2019, Matt and his team have done their very best to give you amazing shows each week. If you feel like our show has helped you to be a better investigator, or maybe even inspired you to become an investigator, please let us know. We're looking for testimonials. Drop Matt an email with a recorded 20 to 30 seconds of you talking about this podcast. You can also email him something verbal about the website. His email is matthews@satellitepi.com. And if you really feel blessed for having this content, consider supporting Matt and our show by joining Investigator's Toolbox. You really have to see version 2.0. And at just 49 cents a day, it's a no-brainer. Now let's jump in to this week's episode. Welcome to this week's episode of PI Perspectives. Today's a special show. We start part two of a three-part series focusing on The Art of Investigation Revisited. This is the second volume of an amazing collection of investigators who each write a chapter on the characteristics it takes to be a successful investigative professional. The book's the brainchild of Dr. Chelsea Benz from John Jay College of Criminal Justice and celebrated investigator Bruce Sackman. On each show, we focus on several of the chapter writers. So let's go to our first segment. Here's private investigator Matt Spare.
And welcome, everyone, to the next episode of PI Perspectives. This is Matt Spare, your host. Today, we are continuing our look at The Art of Investigation Revisited. It's a great second edition book put together by editors Dr. Chelsea Benz and Bruce Sackman. Today, we are here with Ed Ajeb from Nighthawk Strategies. And Ed had the pleasure of writing about ingenuity. Eddie, how are you?
Good. Thank you, Matt. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You're no stranger to this program. We've done a bunch of episodes with you, but it's been a while since we've chatted. So what's new? What's going on?
Well, not much. I mean, I'm very excited for the book to finally be out. It was a really interesting process to be able to write this chapter and then read all the other chapters that the other fantastic authors wrote and see how they all came together. So I was really excited for that. And I've also been busy with a lot of conferences that we were just chatting about, a lot happening on the national legislative front. So keeping busy on a lot of fronts there.
Yeah, you hold the secretary position, NCISS, right?
Currently the vice president.
That's right. You moved up. I'm sorry. Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah.
Apologies to Ms. Torres, who's in your place. So I don't know if I'm coming or going these days. Yeah, it is what it is. Yeah, so NCIS has a lot going on with that, obviously. But let's talk about Ingenuity, because that's what you wrote about. So tell me what your thought process was in going in to write this chapter.
So I thought this was a really important chapter, and it's a chapter that I could relate to, since I don't have the same background that a lot of private investigators have, who may have come from a law enforcement background, military, or insurance. I came from a paralegal background, where I kind of got to see up close and personal what how lawyers craft cases and that sort of thing. So to me, kind of coming up in that sort of background, as well as learning a lot of technological tools and social media tools, I thought Ingenuity was a really appropriate chapter for me to explore. So Ingenuity is basically your ability to think imaginatively, to creatively solve problems, and to get around challenges in new and unique ways. So Ingenuity, of course, is a really important quality for investigators, because not every investigation is the same, and an investigation that you do today might be different methodology-wise in a couple years from now. We may have different resources, we may have different obstacles, we may have different challenges to face. So being able to constantly adapt to that and to re-strategize and to have that ingenuity, I think, is really important for a successful investigator.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things that's you either have it or you don't. And I think those of us that are successful in doing this type of work learn how to think outside the box a lot sooner, right? You got to adapt and change, and you know, you almost have a fiduciary responsibility, right? As someone who's collecting a fee for doing research, to have that spirit of approach, right? You can't just, oh well, yeah, I checked this one thing, I didn't find anything, so there's probably nothing there. Right.
Like, right.
That's not going to cut it. That's not going to make your report look too good, you know, or anything like that. You know, you got to be creative with how you do things, you know, and it could be a number of things, right? It could be creative in research. It could be creative in pretexting, you know, not breaking the law, you know, creative in how you market your business, creative in how you, you know, try and reach a broader scope of people to let them know you're out there doing what you do, or creative in a way, like maybe you offer your services to other investigators, right? Which is something that you've done, and you've made a good living out of it, you know, something to supplement your own clientele and all that. You actually do work with other investigators, right?
Yeah, quite often. And I think that that helped me really kind of branch into the industry, and being able to help other investigators with an aspect of an investigation that they either didn't have the interest or the purview to handle. So that's kind of where I developed a lot of skills doing social media and OSINT and things like that. Being able to specialize in everything is impossible. So it's always good to partner with folks who know how to, and then there are other investigators who I partner with or who can do the things that I don't do or don't know how to do. And that really helps us all succeed. So having that ingenuity to really specialize and get down into the details of what you do, and then knowing others who can do the same on their front is really valuable. And then ultimately you deliver a much more successful and valuable product to the client because of those partnerships and because of those ideas and creativity.
Yeah. And they give you the best stories at cocktail parties, right?
Exactly.
if you didn't have ingenuity, your stories would suck.
Right. they would be very short stories for sure.
Exactly. I looked for this guy, I couldn't find him. Done.
Yeah.
it is interesting, and always the approach that I've taken in getting you into the fold of my own business, you know, is, you know, have the team try and knock out what they can knock out, and the stuff they're having trouble with, well, maybe we call Nighthawk. And yeah, more than once you were able to connect the dots for me on research, and Yeah, sometimes it's also better just to have another set of eyes on things too, right? That's another way to look at things. So what would you hope the reader of the chapter would pull away? If there was one glaring point that you were trying to make, what would you hope they'd pull away from reading your chapter?
Well, I think it's like you were mentioning, if you hit a dead end and if you're looking for someone or you're doing a background investigation and you hit a dead end, really that's the time for an investigator who has ingenuity to really shine. And that's kind of where the rubber meets the road when it comes to being a great investigator is knowing how to navigate those challenges when you hit roadblocks. You know, sometimes you might just look and you just ultimately maybe it's just not out there, but sometimes it is and sometimes it's really just hard to find. So I think the main point of ingenuity is that it's one of those traits and skills that comes out in hard times when you're really struggling, when you're hitting dead ends, and you just have to think creatively and kind of think of other strategies that are of course still maintaining legal compliance and ethics and all that. And really focus your investigation on going after those new and creative ideas and new and creative ways. So sometimes that might be looking at public records from a different angle or thinking about different strategies of conducting a social media investigation. So with ingenuity in great investigators, ingenuity is a skill that is kind of honed over time, and you learn different paths and different methods that you can add to your toolkit. But it's really kind of a internal trait of being able to think outside the box and strategize and sort of be one step ahead. So it's something that you should always keep in your front pocket and always kind of have as a skill to use at your disposal. And it's really something that's sharpened over time as you get more experience and as you work on more cases.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And you touched on something briefly before there. I just want to come back to it. And that's maintaining the legality of the research that you do, right? Your intelligence, your research should always be actionable. What does that mean? That means like it should be able to be admissible in court, right? It should be something that is usable, right? So you want to, yes, be creative, have ingenuity, but you have to stick to the law of whatever state that you're in or federal law that, you know, make sure you're not violating anything because you could blow the doors off a case, but if you do it incorrectly, it may not be admissible. So you got to be careful of that too. Yeah, for sure. It's, you know, something just to be aware of. And, you know, and another thing you talked about was, you know, honing your skills and getting better at your craft. And there are two ways I think you can do that. One would be to go to a conference and sit down and learn something from a great speaker, like a guy named Ed Ajab, who tends to speak at these conferences and do things. You know, you learn that way, right? By attending and networking and everything like that. But the other thing is finding a mentor, you know, finding somebody who's been at it for a bit and just picking their brain. Chances are they might have work, overflow work that they could send off to you. And, you know, you can start getting better at your craft because it really is a repetition thing. Of understanding the processes of doing research, you know, checking the box and making sure that you're looking in all areas. So, I mean, that would be two things that come to mind, on how to, get better at your craft, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think those are two, great ideas. And especially with, going to conferences and learning new things, that will also help you develop contacts, maybe meet a mentor, maybe meet other folks who do the kinds of investigations that you do, and then use that network and build and nurture that network. That's how I've gotten a lot of not just business that way, but developed some really good relationships and some really good partnerships with people through conferences and through associations because you just become more familiar with people. And I mean, I credit associations with honestly being having the honor of writing a chapter for this book, and meeting Chelsea and Bruce through SPY, through Society of Professional Investigators and other associations like that. So it's really important for not just building your knowledge, but building your building yourself up as a professional and as an investigator.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea and Bruce are amazing people. You know, New York is spoiled to have folks like them. Although I don't even know if Bruce can call himself a New Yorker anymore. He's living in that state south of Georgia that we don't talk about. yeah, I mean, it and that's what really what it comes down to. It's a balance of networking, education, and repetition. What do you do when you hit the wall, right? What do you do when you don't know what to do? And that's when something like Ingenuity comes into hand. And you'll get those ideas by reading books, by attending lectures, and by having a mentor, for sure. Yeah, so this was great, Ed. It was great to catch up. I appreciate you coming on and giving us a brief overview. So it's The Art of Investigation Revisited. There'll be a link in the show notes for the book. If you have any questions, Ed's contact information will be in the show notes as well. So thanks, Ed, for jumping on for a few minutes, and always great to see you as usual.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Matt.
After 4 years of development, Scope Now is proud to announce the release of Grid. Grid combines OSINT with real-time physical data to achieve new levels of intelligence gathering. Grid supports over 50 data types and hundreds of thousands of sources. Upgrade your OSINT capabilities with Grid and elevate your intelligence team today at scopenow.com. Check out the PI Institute of Education at piinstitute.com. Since 1989, Kelly Riddle has been teaching on subjects such as surveillance, nursing home investigations, insurance fraud, domestic investigations, hidden assets, and accident scene investigations. The PI Institute of Education is a featured learning partner in the investigatorstoolbox.com. So check out the free content on the site, then visit the Institute for more great savings on additional classes. Next up, Keith Elliott. Let's get right to it.
Today we have another one of the authors that's going to come on and chat a little bit about who they are and what they do. And we're going to be talking about patients today. So that's a good thing. So I would like to welcome Keith Elliott to the program. Keith, how are you?
I'm good, Matt. Thank you.
Yeah, it's so great to have you. We just realized that we'd actually met each other before in person.
Well, no, you realized you met me.
Hey, right. I don't think we were actually introduced.
You had the benefit of knowing who I was, not vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah. We were just down in Florida last month at the FAPI conference, and you had a great presentation down there. So you're based out of Canada. So tell folks a little bit about Reed Research Investigations. That's your business, how you got into it and what you do.
Yeah, so I've been a PI for over 32 years now. Reed Research is a full-service investigation firm, do a variety of human intelligence, so physical surveillance, backgrounds, due diligence, that type of thing, and cyber surveillance, social media, public OSINT searches, different searches in that regard. We work for insurance companies, legal defense, corporations, especially corporations doing the background, the due diligence, that type of stuff, and then physical surveillance to obtain intelligence with respect to individuals actively claiming scenarios where we're trying to identify fraudsters, who they are, where they're acting out of, in particular, some frauds containing crypto and things along those lines. We'll do lengthy surveillance on identifying those actors because they're hiding behind a keyboard and otherwise. Right. And so, yeah, probably 60% of what we do is surveillance based, probably 65, and the rest is balanced out between backgrounds, due diligence, cyber intelligence, things along those lines.
Yeah, I don't know if folks realize how much of a challenge it is to do research in Canada. They don't have the benefits up north that we in the United States have. So you really got to be good with the open source investigative work, right?
Yeah, and there's a ton of privacy concerns. You can't just look anybody up as well. Like I have clients, we don't have a lot of private sector clients. First of all, I'm not interested in that business. Typically not big repeat business or whatever. I'd rather go after the corporate and insurance work. But you can't just randomly look at people and dive into their background. You have to have a permissible purpose under, we have an act called PIPEDA, which is basically our privacy guidelines. And the permissible purpose is such that you have to be defending an insurance claim and checking someone out with respect to a hire, things along those lines. And so that's there. But then we don't have the open source databases. We don't aggregate the data like you guys do, where you can just go to one stop, pay a prescription and a subscription, and ultimately go and acquire a variety of information from people that's been aggregated by whoever. A lot of that's locked down. We don't have access to that kind of stuff. So everything's individual. You have to be authorized to access certain information and otherwise, and it's not easy. Even acquiring information from the courts is not something you can do online. You have to physically go to the courts, pull the records, property tax records, same scenario.
Yeah, and break it down a little bit further. You start talking about different areas of the country, right?
Oh, yeah.
You're dealing with different rules at different parts. Like, you would think the US is pretty much covered by everything. Not so much in Canada. The way you do things in Vancouver and the way you do things in Toronto are completely different, right?
Yeah, our default is typically by provincial standards, not by federal standards. So, jump from Quebec to Ontario, night and day difference with respect to how you can approach things, what you can do. They're not even fans of surveillance. They have even deeper privacy, similar to the GRDP. And they follow the European model on that. And then, yeah, it's all depends on how segregated it is. And the size of Canada is massive too, right? Like east to west, third largest country in the world by geography. And so that spans a lot as well, wherein you're dealing with those geographical issues. So.
So what did you do before you started your business?
So ironically, I went to school to be a copper. I wanted to be a police officer. My wife at the time that I was dating, and she was on the Ontario Provincial Police. And I went to school for law and security administration, got an honors degree in that, and with the intent of being a police officer. And ironically, I wrote in the book about the chapter of patience, whereas that required some patience to be able to get on. When I finished school, 22 years old, full of vinegar, ready to take on the world, top of my class, did really well. Nobody's hiring. And they're not looking for 22-year-olds full of patience, or sorry, full of vinegar. They want patience. And so had to transition. I thought, okay, what am I going to do in the interim? And I stepped into the PI world while I was still in school. I was floor walking, catching shoplifters, and doing undercover plainclothes stuff, looking at those pieces, and ultimately just kind of started doing the undercover piece along those. And then evolved into the fact that, okay, continued to apply to different police forces. We had a big hiring freeze at the time with our provincial government. Nobody was hiring. And I thought, I'll stay in this sector for a while. My wife was already on the OPP. We started to have kids and family. The timing didn't work out. And then it just evolved. And I thought, you know what? I don't need to leave. I'm in my niche. I do this very well. And I found my flow to it. And then so dove into surveillance and backgrounds and investigations, did that for upwards of 20 years, and then partnered in with Reed Research 15 years ago now. And then back in 2019, took over the company as CEO. So I own the company
Nice.
and run it day to day. We have about, I think, 24 investigators at present right now across the province doing a variety of things.
That's amazing. And that's the thing, because we look to be like children of the 80s, you and I. And that's just the way it was when we were getting out of college. They're like, you get hit with these hiring freezes. I had a very similar story in New York City, where I had a job lined up, and the job offer was actually rescinded because of budgetary reasons. And it's like, okay, well, what do I do now? And I ended up doing the similar thing, private sector. I was taking exams for other law enforcement positions around the country, and I just simply wasn't getting called for interviews. And I was scoring well. I was scoring in the mid 90s on these tests, but
Well, Ironically, Matt, we have the exact same story because I actually got hired by London City Police, which is a suburb 2 hours west of Toronto.
No way.
And so I got hired by London City at the time, and they said, okay, we've got your candidate 12. We're looking about 30 to 35 officers that we're going to hire. We've got additional budget considerations, but we're going to hire everybody at the same time. So you're sequential, and we're going to put you all through police college together as one collective class. And you all bond together and you'll work together through the years and everything else. And we've got six ex-coppers that are transitioning from different services around the province that are coming into London. And then those are the first six. And then you're number 12, and we got to get to 30. And we're like, so just be patient, wait, and we'll get back to you. 2 years later, the contract expires, and same thing, rescinded. It's never officially inked, right? It's a tentative offer pending. And yeah, never went down that road. So very, very similar story.
It's all right. London's a party town. It would have been boring.
Yeah.
I
Western University. You sound
may
like you've got some experience up here.
have been there once or twice. a great area. But I mean, it speaks to the chapter, right? Patience. And that's one of the those things, right? And what's so great about this book is that, you know, it teaches you these skills, right? You have the hard skills, right? Surveillance, you know, the stuff that you made your living on. But you got to have the soft skills too of how to be a business owner, how to be an investigator. Like these are the things that are necessary to get you over the line, what you need to do. And patience is so important, you know. And one of the things I learned, because I also was considering becoming an attorney and kind of going that route too. And I took the LSATs, and they teach you know, how to consider alternate possibilities when you're doing all the logic exams and things like that. And it's like we're so quick to look at something and say, like, yeah, I know what happened. This is exactly what happened. But if you don't consider the alternate possibilities of how something took place, you're not really doing justice to finding the correct answer. You know, even though you may know what it is, you gotta do the exercise anyways. And that takes patience, right?
Oh yeah, and then the biggest one that I learned in interviewing is you tend to know the answers going into an interview of someone you're speaking to, or you're trying to extract information, or whether you're trying to get details about how something went down, or whatever the case is, a witness interview, whatever. And generally, as human beings, we like to fill the silence. We communicate on a regular basis, but a soft skill that I learned, and especially when it applies to patients, is when you ask a question, first of all, slow down,
Right.
measure your tone a little bit, fill the voids with just some pauses, that pregnant pause or whatever the case is. It causes people to listen more intently. If you can lower your tone a little bit, talk a little quieter, that works incredibly well. But the biggest issue is when you ask a question, let them answer and just listen. But when they're done, or it appears they're done, don't say a word. Because what happens is that patience allows them to continue, or what they feel like they have to do is fill the gaps. And if you're patient with that, you end up getting a lot more out of a question that you asked than you ever would if you respond instantly.
Yeah.
And so that soft skill is something that's very hard to develop because instantaneously, as investigators, our mind goes to, oh, I got another question. Oh, I got to ask this. And we go rapid fire. Whereas if you just let them give their narrative and go, okay, and what about that? And can you tell me a little more? And just kind of lead them to their own narrative. Your questions aren't going anywhere. You're going to cycle back to them when they're dead stone, quiet. But if you pause, they feel like they have to answer that question. And especially if you're doing something that involves questionable activities, fraud, criminal enterprise, or whatever, they're just nervous. And that nervous energy is going to fill the void. So that patience is really important in that aspect.
I think you're so right with that. The great John Hoda, who's the PI coach and has been around forever, you know, John, he preaches that, and he's got a great video that he put out on how to take witness statements. And one of the things that really stood with me when I watched the video was, you know, him saying, take your time, slow down, don't be so quick to run out the door when you're done even taking the statement. That there has been times where he's finished, completed his statement, and he just continues to build the rapport, and he ends up developing a whole bunch more information. He says, "Hey, do you mind if I kind of make him some amendments and rewrite this a little bit?" And 9 times out of 10, they're saying, yeah, sure, go ahead, you know, whatever you want to do. But it's that, you know, just taking that extra time. And you hit on so many good points there about, you know, the tone and how you carry yourself. What I like to do too is I like to recall, like go back and you know, show that I'm an active listener when somebody's talking about something, like just going back and referencing what they talked about a few minutes earlier, just to show them that you're, you know, even though your mind is running, and that is a skill, right? You got to be able to manage your assignment and build rapport at the same time. It's really, really important.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
It's good stuff. You know, it's like, these are the things that you aren't necessarily naturally gifted with, although some people are, you know, it comes with repetition over time and, you know, just figuring out how to ask those right questions.
I've never, ever had a case, a surveillance, or an interview, or a statement that I didn't walk out of and thought, I could have done that a little different or a little better, right? And that's just the nature of evolution, right? You're always trying to there. I've never like, oh, I completely nailed that. That was perfect. It's never the case. And there's always a little, and you're trying to improve on that. But those are definitely skills that are forefront.
Yeah. I mean, it makes us good at what we do, you know, and then you get known for it. Right.
Yeah,
like this is the guy that does that, you know, and just because you're asking these additional questions and you're taking your time doesn't mean that now has to become part of the narrative either. You know, like that statement that you're writing, that you're taking, you know, because that's a good point too. Like you always got to make it concise to achieve the goal, whatever that goal is that you're trying to do. You know, to me, when I see a statement that's like 5 or 6 pages long, when it could really be maybe one or two tops, I get frustrated, you know, and it's like, and I look at it like you have to write this statement like you're talking to a juror, you know, and they don't want to read through 5 or 6 pages worth of things, right? They want to understand like, okay, these are the facts and this is what I believe happened, you know, under the penalty of perjury, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And just understanding that that's the real target goal, what you're trying to do, right?
So to that point, like one of our company models is actionable intelligence. And so I often use that when I'm presenting, whether it's for the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners or a different FAPI or whatever, I always talk about that we need to act on actionable intelligence. And how I always define that is it's relevant and legally obtained information, but refined to suit the needs of your investigation, right? You have to focus it accordingly. If there's a lot of noise and chafe that isn't relevant to it, it's your job as an investigator to filter through that, not put it in your statement, not necessarily put it in your report, because it's not relevant to the matters at hand, right? Like you need to filter it. And your notes are going to contain those contents, or if you're recording it or whatever the case is, it's all there. You can cycle back with it. But right. You need to keep that focus, because that's why you're being hired by a client to do a specific task, is they're looking towards that specific thing. And as long as you're not biased in the representation of it, then it's fine to focus that accordingly, right? So
yeah, I think one of the other challenges to being patient is understanding that, or your client understanding that, even though you're billing per hour or whatever, you know, like they may end up paying more, but the result's going to be better. And that's one of the biggest challenges that I've seen when you start talking about actionable intelligence, because that takes time.
Yeah. Right? Oh yeah.
It definitely takes time. And if you got somebody that's on a budget and they're like, whoa, I only authorized X amount of time for this, or you know, I only want to pay X amount. Like those are the tough assignments, and they, you know, like that's the tough sell. Understanding that, you know, if you want this done properly, where it's usable, you're going to have to spend a little more to do this, right?
Well, if you think of a triangle, three sides. Time, scope, cost. You only get to pick two.
Right. That's great.
Right? So, right, if you think about it from that perspective, you want it deep and you want it cheap while you're not getting it quick.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and if you want it thorough and you want it quickly, you're going to pay for it. Right? So if you think of that business model with respect, you don't get all three. You only get to pick two out of the triangle. So figure out which one you're willing to give up.
No, this is great. I think this is a great teaser to your chapter. You know, there's lots of good nuggets here that I'm sure are knee deep in the book. So it's The Art of Investigation Revisited. I encourage the listeners to go check it out. We've got a link in the show notes to the book. Keith, I want to thank you for coming on and just giving us a little snippet of your story and what you'll be talking about. And we'll have your contact information in the show notes as well. So
thanks, Matt.
Specializing in the research of liability for personal injury claims, Pacific Liability Research offers insurance assessments of all applicable liability coverages to help determine what a case is potentially worth. Have a case with no insurance policy? Since 2019, the highly trained staff on their insurance discovery team has located over 100 million plus in previously unknown insurance coverage. They offer a full refund for any inaccurate results, and they do not charge for no-hit searches. Additionally, Investigators Toolbox members automatically receive 50% off their first case. Just mention Investigators Toolbox when you fill out your first order. More information can be found at PacificLiability.com. Contact them today and discover the immediate impact that Pacific Liability Research can provide. Satellite Investigations has launched its new website full of great new content. Matt and his team have released some great informative blogs. Make sure you log into LinkedIn and follow Satellite Investigations for the latest content. Let's begin segment 3. This episode has been packed with some great info. Next up, we have Ryan Sackis. Ryan's an attorney and not an investigator. The guys discuss why professionalism is so important to an investigative skill set. Here's Ryan and Matt.
We are here with our next author, a fellow New Yorker, which is kind of cool. I always appreciate speaking to somebody who speaks my language. I want to welcome Ryan Sackis to the program. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much, Matt.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to come on and chat about your chapter and your experience in being involved in this amazing book, just putting forth a product that someone who's either looking to get into investigations or studying in school or doing whatever just gives that leg up of the skills that you don't read about, that you're not really told about, that are very, very necessary for being an investigator. And your chapter was on professionalism, which as a business owner, I can completely relate to that. But before we get into all that, why don't you tell folks a little bit about your background and how you got to where you're at?
Sure. So I'm a former assistant district attorney. I graduated law school in 2005 and was soon hired by the Richmond County DA's office. That's the Staten Island DA's office for you non-New Yorkers. I remember getting the call on my birthday, and the then DA Dan Donovan at the time told me that I was hired. I got the job, so I was thrilled to start. And it was a Friday, so he told me on Monday, show up to report to Special Narcotics in Manhattan. So I didn't know what the office was. I'd never heard of it. So I really didn't know what I was in for, but I was excited. And when I showed up, I think I realized that it was going to be a fun but really challenging job, and definitely sure. daunting for a young attorney.
Yeah, lots of challenges. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. So I encountered a lot of them throughout my 12 years with the office. So I was with Special Narcotics for 12 years, from 2005 to 2017. I was then appointed by Governor Cuomo as counsel to the New York State Athletic Commission, which regulates all boxing and MMA events throughout the state. So as a lifelong huge sports fan and somebody who actually went to law school to be a sports agent, it was sort of a dream job. Oddly, a dream job that I only stayed at for a year.
Right.
I then worked as special counsel with Kazowitz Benson Torres, which is a national litigation firm. Then in 2020, I was off on my own. I started a consulting firm soon after that with my partner, Richard Washington. And I am currently legal counsel to the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
Right. Right. And that's an awesome foundation. And then for those of you that aren't aware of that foundation, or from New York, that is dedicated essentially to survivors of 9/11. And supporting family members that have lost loved ones,
yes.
or those who are currently sick because of exposure down to, at the wreckage of the Twin Towers. It's a great organization, really, really awesome. So you've had a career. So you've worked private practice, you've worked for government agencies, and you know, let's dig into the whole professionalism thing, because there's different angles there, you know, where your professionalism has to be there, but maybe a little bit different when you're talking about working for a government agency as opposed to working in private practice. So tell me a little bit about the differences there.
Sure. I think there, like you said, there are different challenges. And, you know, the stakes can be different. I think when you are a prosecutor, you recognize that every case has the potential to end, it result in someone's incarceration, maybe even separate them, that person from his or her family.
Right.
So, you know, it's really important to employ professionalism, not just as a prosecutor, but as a defense attorney as well. Sure. And I was, you know, I did have the opportunity to take on one case as a defense attorney. That was a couple of years ago, and I really just did it as a favor to a family friend. And I think it was in that experience that I realized once you're out of the DA's office, you know, you acknowledge, you get to see the awesome power of the prosecutor to really impact people's lives.
Yeah.
So, it was, you know, it was intimidating to be on the other side. So that case ended in a dismissal. So I think at this point I'm retired from defense attorney work, undefeated, right. And I'll keep it that way.
All right, champ.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Great. Yeah, sorry, Matt. So, but also, you know, when you work in private practice, you know, it's a different kind of work because, you know, you report to a client, right?
Sure.
You work for a client, and even if it's work as a civil attorney, you know, for that client, it's really the most important matter in their lives. So,
oh, absolutely,
yeah,
100%. It's always going to mean more to the client than. Yeah, because of the ramifications of it, you know, and talking about professionalism, even on like both ends there, like understanding that, you know, social engineering is so important in what we do, right? That rapport, being able to build trust, to build credibility, things of that nature, that really is in relation to how you carry yourself, right? So if you're respectful
yes.
to others, you know, if you respect the court, if you respect your adversary, if you respect
yes.
the witness who you're interviewing, like these are all key things in projecting you know, what you're trying to accomplish, or projecting, you know, that authority, that comfort level, creating rapport to get that end result of what you're looking for. Like you can't discount that. It's so
you're
important,
right.
And it's something that
no,
AI will never replace, which is great.
Yeah, you're right. And those, I think, are, you know, some of the soft skills that you develop, or, you know, hopefully develop, because it's really a formula for success as an attorney.
Right.
You know, building a reputation through integrity. I always had a very strong rapport, I think, with the defense bar. I respected their job. You know, also with judges. So I think, you know, I did my best, when I was at the DA's office. And, I think, that led me to a very rewarding career, personally and professionally, as a prosecutor.
Yeah, you know what's funny is in those arenas where you are, right? So you've got the attorneys being incredibly professional with one another, but sometimes you'll get like a judge that's not so professional, especially as you higher up the chain and you start getting to the little fiefdoms of someone's court, you know, like, and, you know, and, but that's a booby trap. Like that is definitely a landmine that you don't want to step into, because I've been in federal court, man. I have seen tyrants, and I've seen like the way that the attorneys have handled those tyrants or those outbursts, you know, and, you know, figuring out how to, okay, I still need to achieve what I need to achieve. How am I getting that done? And if you don't do it properly, you're done. Your goose is cooked, man. I'm like, I got a case I'm working on literally today where I'm waiting for a subpoena to be so ordered. And this attorney can't get the subpoena so ordered because, you know, he probably doesn't have the right professional behavior in trying to get that done. And sometimes it's the attorney, sometimes it's the clerk that you're dealing with, and maybe that clerk is not being professional, you know,
right?
Like, so you just you never know. But you know what's
most important, I mean, you have to treat
and
you have to treat the clerks like gold, if anyone. That's you know, that's how things happen.
It became very apparent to me when I used to when I was just getting into this business, right? So I worked for an attorney and they would send me down to do filings, file an RJI, file a motion, you know, things like that, you know, drop subpoenas off to get so ordered. And man, like you had to learn how to talk to people. And they were, I remember I was in the Bronx courthouse, second floor, room 217, filing an RJI. And the guy who you know, gave the approval to whether or not they would accept the paperwork was a grumpy dude, just was not happy. And I was always trying like to treat him, you know, nicely and just maybe change the subject or whatever. So one day I'm in there and I notice he's got a ring on his finger that has John Jay, I guess the mascot and the colors and all that. So I was like, okay,
right.
This dude went to John Jay. So did I. All right. So here's my angle, right? So I'm just going to socially engineer that angle.
Let's see. Yeah. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. And it was like,
yeah, that's it.
Hey, Matt, this thing's not signed properly. I really shouldn't take it, but you know, you're my guy. Don't worry about it. We'll put it through. Just remember for next time. Right. So like stuff like that started to happen. I remember even in the subpoena room, the guy who took in the records, miserable. He hated life, but he loved Star Trek.
Yeah, it's a common,
right?
Yeah, it's a common theme. Yeah.
So you know, you just started doing stuff like that.
Oh, that's funny. That's it. Brush up on your sci-fi. Yeah,
there we go. Right, and it's just understanding those situations. But you know, getting back to how important that professionalism is. You know, no matter what you do. Like especially in the investigative world and the legal world, your reputation is everything. You know, your integrity is everything. The second that there's a question of that, you're toast. You're done. Nobody wants anything to do with you, right?
Yeah. And that holds true, I think, for kind of all aspects of law, whether you're a prosecutor, defense attorney, you know, civil litigator, it's all true. If you can't be trusted by the judiciary or the other side, I mean, you're definitely sort of blocked out, and you're at a tremendous disadvantage, I think, that, you know, for the rest of your career.
Yeah, and the other thing to realize too is that like it trickles down. Like you could be the guy in the mailroom and understand that you're representing whoever it is you're working for. Right. So your attitude, your professionalism needs to be there. Right. You know, as investigators that are hired by attorneys, like you are an extension of that attorney. Often you're the first, you know, exposure that they have to that attorney. So like on the plaintiff side, if you're going out and you're meeting with a potential new client and you're trying to get them to retain whoever you're working for, like being incredibly professional, showing up in a suit, like back in the day, right? Suit, tie, nobody wears ties anymore. But you know, like,
I was thinking about it, but
exactly. My nexus says thank you, you know. So, but having that professional, like it means something. It means something to present professionally, to speak professionally, and just understand at the end of the day, you're representing either your employer or you know someone who's contracted you to do something, and how important that is, right?
That's right. Yeah, when you're at work, you're on the record at all times.
Yep.
So, you know, I think I've, you know, that professionalism, integrity, those are qualities that were instilled in me by my mom, who, you know, raised three boys on a very modest New York City public school teacher's salary, and, you know, worked night school, worked summer school, and she even hired me as one of her teachers before I started law school. So, you know, no matter what job I had, whether it was, you know, a high stakes job like the DA's office or, you know, something when I was younger and, you know, seemingly inconsequential. Like I was a landscaper at a grass cutter at a cemetery.
Right.
But, you know, doing a good job in, you know, sort of in that scenario is important to somebody. It's important to the people who, you know, sort of, you know, visit the cemetery. So, you know, I've always kept that in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And I think the other thing that you have to realize, and this was something that, you know, you and I are of a certain age, we probably didn't have to deal with that so much when we were younger, is social media now, right? I've seen so many people ruin their careers because they want to get on Twitter, X, whatever the heck you want to call it these days, and they just start spewing out stuff, right? And they start, you know, opinions, you know, they start talking about like politics on something like LinkedIn, which you don't do that, right? LinkedIn is not a place to go and, and, you know, go for the donkeys or the elephants, right? You just don't do that. But I've seen it happen. And
newsflash,
like, increasing, it's not professional. Like, it's not professional.
Yeah, increasing frequency. It's very disappointing when I see those sort of posts.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm really either a unicorn or a dinosaur. I've never had social media.
No, good never for had. You.
I think I had Facebook for about a month, and then, you know, just didn't like it, didn't understand it, didn't see the value in it, and didn't see the appeal. Never had, you know, Twitter, Instagram. So I'm only on LinkedIn. That's it.
Yeah, there you go. But you know, just understanding, like, those are the landmines that are out there too. Like, don't get baited into that. And I've seen people trying to bait one another, especially when you talk about like contentious election related stuff from, you know, back 6 years ago, you know, 7-8 years ago. You know, it's just nonsense. Like, I will not talk about that. I will not do any of that. But I've seen people, like, they fall into that trap, and newsflash, not professional. Nobody wants to hear. Nobody cares.
You know? No, not at all. I don't think you know, the general public, potential, you know, prospective clients, nobody needs to know where you land on every issue. That are, you know, that's unrelated to your job.
Absolutely.
You can keep some stuff to yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So what would you hope the reader, you know, someone who's getting through your chapter, what would you want them to walk away with that? Like, hey, wow, I pulled this nugget out here. This was important. And I find completely useful.
Yeah, I think the case that I describe in the book was a really unique experience during my time at the DA's office. I directed a long-term investigation, which resulted in the indictment and prosecution of, a drug organization, drug trafficking organization.
Okay.
And there were a lot of defendants, you know, maybe 20 to 30. And I ended up doing the job of the defense attorney, in a sense, in exonerating one of the defendants who was charged. And, you know, it was different because, you know, I hadn't done that in my role as a prosecutor.
Right.
But here I am trying to poke holes in my own case, because I did at some point, based on, you know, some of the statements and representations of the defense attorney and the defendant, I said, well, let me see if they have a point here. So it was frustrating because they gave me no help and no direction. So I had to take it upon myself. And I, you know, being a prosecutor is not about, despite what a lot of people think, it's not about putting someone in jail. That's what we think. You know, the defense attorney gets you out, keeps you out of jail, and the prosecutor puts you in. In this case, you know, just like in every case, you know, the prosecutor is uniquely situated in the criminal justice system to
represent the people.
Yeah, the people and the defendant, you know, to add as an advocate for the truth.
That's so, a great way to look at it. Definitely.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's, you know, it's not about your conviction rate or, you know, or any of that. So it's really about doing the job to the best of your ability every day, despite distractions. And, you know, we're all not at our best every day. So, you know, I think if I had any advice for young investigators, it's to identify and embrace your process. Sure. People work differently. Some people can kind of sit down in front of a computer and really just you know, work and type all day long. I'm not one of those people. I never have been.
Right.
So it's all about, you know, how you put yourself in a position to you know, to excel.
Right. Right. Awesome. Well, I think this is a good place to tease it, right? You've heard a little bit about it. Now go and get the book and read it and learn more and go check out the whole story. So, Ryan, thank you for coming on and chatting a bit about this. So it's The Art of Investigation Revisited. It's Dr. Chelsea Binns and Bruce Sackman are the editors. It's a collection of various different authors who have tons of experience, investigative experience, that are talking about skills that you need, that you really need to get the job done, that aren't necessarily the hard skills. It's more of a soft skill type of a book there. So thanks again, Ryan, for coming on. Thank you, everybody, for checking out this segment. And we'll catch everybody next week on the next show. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for checking out the show. Please make sure you follow PI Perspectives on YouTube. What an amazing amount of knowledge that was just shared. Please make sure you pick up a copy of The Art of Investigation Revisited. The link is in the show notes. We'd like to thank Campbell Insurance Group for sponsoring the show. Remember to tell them you listen to save $50 when you apply for insurance. Additional thanks to Scope Now, Pacific Liability Research, and the PI Institute for Education. Also, don't forget about investigativetoolbox.com, where you can type in Perspectives50 to save $50 when you join up. Follow Matt and Satellite Investigations on LinkedIn. And if you have a question or a comment about the show, you can email Matt at matthews@satellitepi.com. And you'll find him on Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook. He's always looking for feedback to bring you the best shows possible. And we'll be back next week with a new show, so make sure you tune in and stay safe out there.